one, I wanted to mention this also, it's not just one service to Krishna, but as Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, engage in my prescribed, in your prescribed duties, engage in your service. You have to think about the service that you have to do for Krishna, but also think of me. Not calling for Arjuna to be a schizophrenic. He's calling for thought of him. Keep your mind on Krishna. In other words, it's true that devotional service is not different to Krishna, so think about your service, and that's thought of Krishna. But while in advance, as one is anxious to advance in devotional service, one will think of Krishna while thinking of service to Krishna. Specifically. Like Prabhupada said in one lecture in Mayapur, when you come before the deity in the morning, you take an impression of that deity, and that impression should stay with you all day while you're engaging in so many varieties of service to Krishna. So we're over time. Sridhar Swami is here. And I don't want to... I'll maybe take one or two questions and we'll go on. Somebody you haven't... Go ahead.
My question is, how our, let's say, upon our free will, we may decide to go towards Krishna or turn away.
Yeah.
So how our free will depends on His control. Like, for example, let's say, you said that Krishna sees some other group qualified.
Right. So we'll take it, be very practical. You want to turn your attention to Krishna. But don't you find that as you try to do that, there's so many things that take your attention away from Krishna? More so than take your... And what are those so many things? There are those different categories of things. Due to past impure activity, due to past pious activity, due to laziness, and so many other things. Even improperly performing your devotional service. Presently. So, those things are all under Krishna's control. He can withdraw them. For them to be dissolved, He is the dissolver. And you, what is it that you can do to dissolve? You can do, you can engage, you can try to take your mind to Krishna, but sometimes the mind's a heavy weight. It wants to go the other direction. You have a mind of its own. A will of its own. So it's under Krishna's control. The internal potency is under Krishna's control, as the external potency is under Krishna's control. That's for, to acknowledge that is not, you know, like a tossing in the towel. It's tossing in the towel of being the giving up the idea of I have some ultimate independence. My independence is I can continue to desire to go to Krishna. After that, I'm dependent. That's my independence. I'm using it. I'm fully using my independence to choose to go to Krishna. Independently, that's my will. But I'm dependent. For success in that. Others who haven't been raising their hands want to ask something? Have you been thinking yet? Okay, go ahead.
There's a essentially the same question in other angles when someone
A previous exercise of free will. Vidyananda Maharaj, I heard him answer this question once. There's certain acts, once you do, they're irrevocable. You jump out the window on the, top floor of the Empire State Building. You can't, midway, say, wait a minute, I changed my mind. Wait, I got free will. I should be able to. But you bear the consequence of certain previous acts, certain exercises of free will. So that's what our karma is. So we're going to end. And so far I've gotten one homework paper. Dridhavrata. Pajante mam dridhavrata. Dridhavrata, that is wanted, determination. It's a little hard to understand what this. Go on. When one is determined, his success is assured. If he's not determined, then success or failure. At least there's a hope that if one's not determined, he may also become a success. So we've prepared the ground a little bit for discussing the necessity of making effort. So we're going to speak today and tomorrow about two different kind of generic categories of effort. In the course, as we're discussing these, I'll also repeat one philosophical point. That is, for sadhana bhakti, we're describing that stage that goes all the way from shraddha to ecstatic, spontaneous devotion. So, in the course of that big stretch, according to Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, two things gradually are being manifest, that is, the destruction of sufferings due to the seeds of one's past misdeeds, and even the sufferings due to one's past good deeds, that is, trying to become the enjoyer of those things. If you can see. Is there any one of those timeline things left? They were being passed around. How far did they make it? Keel and I didn't keep them all, did you?
Pass them around.
Are they finished? There's one. Is that an extra one or that's yours? All right. I'll give it to you for umbrella and done. Those that you didn't get, we'll make some more from this one. It's right over here. The attendant sheet is being passed around. If for some reason the attendant sheet doesn't somehow make it to you at the end of class, check and make sure you put your name down. So on this sheet, those of you that have one, down in the lower left corner, it gives the Sanskrit and English for the five categories of kleshas that are destroyed. It corresponds with anatta nivritti. Anatta nivritti is up in the upper right-hand corner from past sins. Those anarthas arising from past sins. And when you're suffering a lot, down here in the lower left corner, then one's attention will not be going fully to the holy name. One's attention will be going to getting rid of those darn sufferings. So there are five in number, and if you look at these, and then when you sit and listen to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's class, you'll understand where these things come from. They weren't just nicely invented from a fertile imagination. Suffering comes from ignorance, the root cause of suffering. And there are different kinds of ignorance. And there's different, you know, varieties of suffering that goes along with that ignorance. So these kinds of sufferings are mitigated, and Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur I'm not going to read them because you can read them. But I'll comment on them in a general way in the course of today's topic. Efforts necessary in our practical day-to-day hearing and chanting activities, sadhana activities. And shubhada, the awakening of things that are auspicious. So fleshagni and shubhada. These are the two throughout the whole range that gradually, more and more and more, the material sufferings are mitigated and all those things auspicious are manifest. We mentioned, this is just a review point, but the all auspiciousness of pure devotional service, Prabhupada indicates in Nectar Devotion, is it's all around good for everybody. Something like Bhaktisiddhanta speaking to Prabhupada that is, this will be good for you and good for everybody else, going to the West and preaching Krishna consciousness. So these categories are four in number. You don't have them on your papers, so I'll just say them slowly. And they're kind of obvious. One of them is very nice. It's the auspiciousness of pure devotional service manifests all good qualities. So, in relation to sadhu sangha, we mentioned that there are 24 characteristics of a saintly person or the devotee, and the principal characteristic, sarup lakshana, it's called in Sanskrit. Yeah. Full submission and devotion to the personality of Godhead. This is the principal characteristic. That is the principal characteristic of sadhana, bhakti. Following behind that principal characteristic, all the other qualities of a devotee become decorations or ornaments. So in the course of this shubhada, or developing of all auspiciousness, all the other 23 qualities become manifest. Now I'm bringing this up first because of the point of our topic today in general, that is making efforts in our direct devotional practice. This is the sarup lakshana, but in the course of doing that, all other good qualities, if you are being fully and properly attentive, will also develop. You have to take into consideration what these other qualities are in order to successfully fulfill the primary characteristic. Something like Mahendrani's answer yesterday to the question, is it necessary to conscientiously remove anartas while you're performing your devotional practices? And the answer is, yes, you must, even if it means 24 hours chanting. How are you going to do that? And if there are impediments or obstacles in the way, you have to remove the obstacles in order to successfully continually chant or perform devotional practices. A second kind of auspiciousness in this connection is that the devotee becomes very contented and happy, satisfied, tushti. Being satisfied in that activity itself, not feeling the hankering or need for other sense gratifications to augment your devotional service or devotional practices, for the feeling of fulfillment and satisfaction. This is an progressively advanced stage of sadhana bhakti. Two others are this devotee, the sadhaka. The word sadhaka indicates one who is practicing sadhana. The sadhaka becomes a blessing for the whole world. And becomes progressively more attractive for the whole world. This is the fourth one. just like we read about the in the Sad Goswami Astakam, how Dira Dira Jana Priyo, for both the cultured people and the ruffians, they were equally dear to both categories. And so this Shubhada, I'm just emphasizing again, this appearance of auspiciousness goes all the way up to bhava. And that is to say, in the bhava stage, both these two are fully manifest. The struggle with material desires and longings and so on, and the trying to awaken one's better qualities, that's all these things are taken care of progressively by sadhana. Yes. The spelling?
The Sanskrit terms.
I don't have a Sanskrit.
Corresponding to the two, but
that's the category. There's four visions. Huh? No, I don't have
Tushti.
Satisfaction. Huh?
There's a list of 24 qualities, and he started with sage watching.
Embodies all good qualities. Tatashka lakshana. Tatashka, marginal. Lakshana, characteristics. Tatashka lakshana. Three. The sadhaka becomes a blessing for the whole world. No. Attractive. Anyway, blessing can be there, but not attract the minds of those. I'm going to make a rule here today because we have lots of discussion. Certain persons keep their hand in the air a lot, so I'm going to invite the silent majority to participate in our discussion. So each person gets one chance to say something. Use your hand raising with discretion. Let me finish our review. No. So just a quick, we can quickly discuss this point. Following Shraddha comes Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, and Anarta Nivritti. So I'd like to hear a little 2 or 3 minute discussion on the comparative effort in those three. The comparative effort necessary to improve your sadhana, one's sadhana, in the category of sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, and Anarta Nivritti. This is kind of a, you know, we'll synthesize some of the ideas that we've been discussing. Yes, Kathleen? Huh? No, here's specifically one in three separate categories. What kind of effort is necessary in the category of sadhu sangha? If one is thinking, I would like very much to improve my devotional practices so I can move closer to the goal of loving Krishna, what must you do in terms of sadhu sangha? We don't need a whole long inventory, just a kind of summary statements here. Shalini? Okay, so I mentioned this yesterday, something that's a contrast between just passively waiting for that event to happen, or let's say, you know, at least coming to class regularly, or seeking beyond that, seeking hankering, bhopa, or greediness, hankering for that spiritual association. Any others on this point? Yes?
Making additional efforts to seek out these people, actually making, using your energy to develop some place for
you know, how is that different than what she said? Same point or different in some way?
No,
it's
the same.
Okay.
One thing is, as you progress, you have to be more conscious of what you're doing.
Yeah, very good. It's a qualitative consideration. When in the company of such persons, let me not only seek out being in their company, but then, you know, not make stupid activities or more positively, prepare myself to know how in that association I can get the best benefit. So quantitative and qualitative kind of hankering and preparing oneself and placing oneself in that position and then absorbing as much as possible. After all, 1/11th of a second, right? Association can give one liberation. You better use that 1/11th of a second the best way. Okay, so now kind of comparison or contrast or another situation is when thinking about my own devotional practices, what kind of effort is necessary? This is a review, it's not a surprise or trick thing, it's just reviewing the points that we've made earlier. Mahendrani?
You decided you want to take more shelter of a particular Vaishnava.
You're on the side of Sangha part or Vajna Kriya part? Okay, so
No.
Vajna Kriya. Explain your answer, because I'm not clear what you mean.
Well, when you said it's review, I was thinking that today when she was saying, of course you have faith of coming in association with bodhis, and then as you associate, you'll hamper more to take more shelter of the Vaishnavas, and then you'll surrender.
Okay, so you're kind of combining the two of Satasangha and Vajna Kriya. If I want to perform my devotional practices with greater success, then I have to think about how I'm doing those devotional practices in a nice way, in proper relation with the sadhu. Is that the point? Anything further? Yeah?
You have to do kind of consciously and also steadily. Not that you just do something.
Okay, this is good. This is the theme of Vajna Kriya as far as what I've examined from the Charya's descriptions. Is the on the lower end is a kind of slackness or intermittent effort and then slackness ranging progressively up to a steady effort in devotional practice, including Mahendrani's point of the relationship of that sadhu or those sadhus whom one is particularly getting strength from, to do that as an ongoing internal and external effort. And performing practices, those things, because what we will be talking about today is Vajna Kriya, efforts in those activities which directly give rise to awakening our love of God. So not to do them intermittently, but progressively, effort-wise, more and more steady effort. So we can look at, let's say, the difference between... Well, Prabhupada writes this in Nectar Devotion. If there's some injunction, something is good for you, you should do it. But the standard of doing it is above your capacity. Then one may do that same thing to some degree, but steadily. Like we may say to somebody, chant one round a day. And then gradually the understanding is we can let them know it's not just a trick, that in course of time your chanting can increase. So same thing, I'm connecting the two, is effort can also begin at some level, but you should understand effort-wise, do something steadily. Although you may not immediately experience overwhelming result in improving your sadhana bhakti. By doing it steadily, 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 this is this one of the symptoms or signs that progress is there. More so than when you weren't making that effort. And sure enough, the fruits will come of improvement. Okay, that's in Bhajana Kriya. And Anartha Nivritti, efforts necessary. They're related, but they're separate categories also. Again, this is not a trick question, it's a review. Bhajana Kriya and Anartha Nivritti. The emphasis in Bhajana Kriya is, as Krishna Kriya Prabhupada said, the slackness versus steadiness in effort in devotional activity. In Anartha Nivritti, the emphasis is uprooting those things that don't complement very nicely your devotional practices. They interfere with your devotional practices in different ways. So those things should be carefully eliminated. First, you know, in progressive stages up to totally eliminating anarthas. And there's effort necessary in that. Yes?
One effort would be to know what the anarthas are.
Right. That's the point of making long lists that, you know, it's not just a Sanskrit, you know, exercise to know. As I said to you commented yesterday, if you want to get from here to Boston, you know that there's four things you can do wrong that will make you not get there. You're going to want to know what those four things are. So having some working knowledge, it's something like in Gopi's class, for those of you that are attending his class. The student of Vedanta has to have read the preliminary literatures and have a general working knowledge. So sadhana, improving sadhana, just starting it up, there are a number of persons here who are very new devotees. So I particularly wanted to bring this point up at some point. In fact, it's in my notes. For those who are new in this class, here's a word of encouragement. It's my notes to you. These things may seem like, you know, light years away or something. But as one progresses in improving sadhana, they become very important. They're like if you had a map all drawn out, like I had to make a map or give directions for the devotees to come to Gita Nagari. So it's real easy. Holland Tunnel, Route 78, 81 South, 322. But then when you get off 322, you can get lost. Just coming off of 75 and trying to find Gita Nagari. So all the last little things become real important. Otherwise, you won't get to Gita Nagari. You have the phone number. You can call up and say, "Hey, I'm in Timbuktu. How do I get to the farm?" So our previous acharyas have given us very clear markings along the road of devotional, of sadhana bhakti, how to get to that stage of spontaneous devotion. So these particular anarthas and impediments and lists of things, it's helpful to know what they are. In fact, it's imperative to know what they are. As one progresses further, one wants to know what they are. As one progresses further, just like anything else, you know, someone could be told, "Go in the kitchen and cook lunch," but I've never cooked before. Okay, there's all the ingredients are there. Or something. and you drive to the store, I don't have a license and I've never driven. That's okay. Here's the key. There's the car. You've seen lots of people do it in the past. Go ahead. Don't worry, Prabhu. It's not hard. There's the deity. Perform some worship. Yeah, there are particulars. So in the topic of improving sadhana bhakti, these items are important to know. What they mean, not just as a cerebral exercise, but like we said with faith, the two characteristics of faith, here's another viewpoint, but a practical application of that. Faith means to have some general acceptance of what the scripture says. Again, you remember that from Gopi's class. Then the next is that kind of faith that I will implement these things. So the lists are meant for more than just learning a list. You have to implement, as your efforts for improving your devotional practices get going, get underway, then here are some guidelines of things that you can see. These are going to stand in the way of my making necessary improvements. Okay, we've taken up half of our class time. And I'd like to thank all the devotees who handed these things in. It's very, very enlightening just to read through it. If this is my reward for teaching this class, it's just getting to read all the things that you've written. And your efforts to improve your devotional practice, it's very enlightening. So I'd like to try to share it in a little bit of an organized manner. I've made some categories. I'd like to read all of the items under those categories, but I don't think I'll be able to. So here we go. This is our topic of now taking our theoretical discussion of improving in technique of hearing and chanting, etc., worshipping and studying, improving those things. What do you find works nicely for you? So one category is helpful activities performed just before chanting. You're chanting japa, I assume. So several devotees mentioned that they have a little set thing, I know Prabhupada does, before they begin chanting. Chanting of Mangalacharana prayers. Mangalacharana prayers, specifically it's prayers to the disciplic succession, members of the disciplic succession. With the purpose of turning one's attention to them, invoking their blessings to chant successfully. And this is a standard and very, very pukka Vaishnava practice. Not just before chanting, but in general, before beginning any activity, to take one's mind in devotion to this and that and that and that personality whom one is very dependent upon, calling upon their blessing for the success of that activity, spiritual success of that activity, and then beginning the activity. Very nice. Chanting Shikshastakam. Some of our temples do that. Some of our devotees do this on their own. They've indicated helping with the idea specifically in mind of helping to remember the glories of the holy name, or reading Namastaka, set of eight prayers to the holy name, or reading from Namamrita, reading portions of this and that book, Madhurya Kandamani, etc., that emphasize specifically in portions the singular importance of chanting of the holy name. And then chanting the holy name. Some indicated praying, sitting before beginning chanting, preaching to the mind or instructing the mind while chanting, or
opposite to self-offenders, number infinity. But the net result is the mind becomes more packed up in the holy name. The instructions become secondary. The holy name becomes primary. You have to watch, because shortly after spending that time instructing the mind, you'll find that the little leave a little slack, and the mind is instructing on something else, and then the mind is gone somewhere else. So the primary focus is on packing up the holy name, bringing the mind to Krishna. This is our overall theme for this course. Somehow bringing the mind to Krishna. Praying while chanting. We mentioned praying before chanting. But praying while chanting. Praying to the holy name. The benefit, again, there's benefit and there's things to watch out for. Let the mind wander away from the holy name a little bit and it's far away. The purpose of that praying is to enter more deeply into a devotional mood, to address the holy name for revealing the fullness of the holy name's completeness or beauty or mercy or whatever terminology, and helping the mind to stay there in a devotional mood while chanting Nama Prabhu. Prampra? Okay. So I have three more general categories from all of your notes. I mentioned them. Conditions helpful while chanting. I just put other kind of miscellaneous, other points in improving chanting, and then another page for reading techniques. It's nice to hear these. Comment? Question?
Question.
Go ahead.
While chanting, is it allowed or is it okay if I create a picture in my mind of some beautiful land and I imagine that this is how it looks like in Krishna Loka?
You can do that, but better to take your mind directly to the holy name. And I know somebody that does like that, and they, you know, I'm sure the scenery changes as you become a little more purified from something that. But you know, there's the Krishna book, Krishna Leela is filled with descriptions of wonderful, wonderful transcendental settings. And then Krishna is also there. So in that way, especially in the beginning, I mean, if you may be artistic or something, and you may like doing like that, but particularly in the beginning, make sure that your attention is going to the holy name and not constructing the scenery. Yes? Well, others may want to comment, but personally, I can say that the sound has form. It has quality. There's a fullness to the sound of Krishna's name, and to give your attention fully to that sound. I mean, I have a different experience than you. I don't. It's not, the sound of Krishna's name is not something abstract that I have to put it in the context of something that's concrete. The sound is Krishna. The holy name is Krishna. So, tending to the sound of Krishna's name is, from my experience, sufficient.
It's like another combined thing about how some people learn, and so if you're actually visually seeing the form of Krishna, you know, a lot of people think Hare, you know, seeing Radha, Krishna, you see Krishna. I wouldn't think that would be.
There's no harm, no harm. But I'm trying to address her question.
How can you even do it any other way? Her question is.
You just hear just the sound.
The sound is complete. The sound is also form. The sound is also qualities.
And there's no visual perception of anything. Well, there's some people like that. Like the two things, some people are visual and some, or there are some people who don't need to see anything. Their mind never looks at. You don't see anything.
Like Mahendrani, when you know, for the idea of seeing the holy name in its written out form, she had to stop and think of, so I'm also stopping to think, and it's not like it's not, you know, a swirl of the stars in the Milky Way or something, or some, anyway, it's the sound of Krishna's name.
That's what I try to listen what I'm saying. That keeps my mind that way.
So responding to these two questions, is it that your mind is like a blob or not on anything particular except the holy name? And the answer is your mind is simply on the holy name.
That's not how we're trying to think.
It's a
stroke. That's not what the effort was to listen.
Okay, our time is up and there's more to go, so we'll just have to still, I'll hold this until tomorrow. We'll finish up other conditions that are helpful while chanting and other points for improving chanting. So by this evening, I'll repeat the idea of homework. Sammy, just last little thing here. By this evening, can you please do as you did, hand in a sheet that describes your personal efforts in improving your sadhana, not specifically the activities of hearing and chanting directly, but other activities that you find are helpful for a nice participation in hearing and chanting. Other attendant activities that you find help you in taking up your hearing and chanting in a nice manner. Is that clear? Any question on it? Yeah. Deliver to room 7 by tonight. Whatever you have on paper. Yes? Okay. Yes.
This? She didn't have one?
No. This.
Oh, yeah, 6, 9, 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. Yeah.